You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. It is great to be back with you this Saturday evening, May the 11th. I was out last week, as you know, and I was telling Sam Bushman just a few minutes ago before the show started that I literally have been jonesing for the last few days to get back on the air. It's amazing how missing just one week just totally revitalizes your spirit. I mean, of course, I look forward to every week on the show. Last week, I was out. It was my wife and I's 13th wedding anniversary. So I was out. Winston Smith covered the show. What a great job Winston did. I want to say that at the top of the at the very top of things tonight. And I listened to that show on our drive home last week in the archives, and just a magnificent broadcast. Sam Bushman was a part of that. Winston had a quartet of young activists in the second hour, and then Reverend Brett McAtee in the third hour, which I think that he did probably the best presentation we've ever had on this show in reconciling why our politics and our faith are congruent with one another rather than being at odds with one another. I just thought it was a splendid show. I really enjoyed what Winston brought to the table. But in taking that week off, just really re-energized me. We had an incredible April, of course, with the special series with the Confederate History Month and with Easter and everything that we did. And it was a little more mentally taxing than most shows because we had so much we wanted to do in April. But then to take one week off, be back tonight, I am just totally excited and eager to get on with the program. So I am rested and recharged, and I'm going to welcome back to the show tonight for the first time in several years one of TPC's all-time most frequently interviewed guests. And it's truly a pleasure tonight, not right now, but in the second hour, we're going to bring back to the show Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network. He's going to inform us about an ominous piece of legislation that could finally criminalize freedom of speech in America. Yes, indeed, folks. I am surprised that more people are not talking about this, this so-called Equality Act. This bill is snaking its way through Congress right now. And like I said, very few people are talking about it, but we will tonight with one of the best activists we have on our side, Reverend Ted Pike, a longtime friend, a true friend. Ted Pike will be back in the second hour for the first time in 5 years. He's been semi-retired for the last few years, although he still is among our most frequently interviewed guests. He made so many appearances over the first decade of this show. It's great to have him back on tonight. I still call in and check on him regularly, and he is making a rare appearance tonight to bring to this audience specifically news of what's going on there in Washington. Very important. Stay tuned for that. I guess I was just so excited to get started, I forgot to mention, maybe you forgot, but I am James Edwards, and it is great to be here with you. As I said, absence makes the heart grow fonder, as they say. I did truly miss y'all and deeply missed y'all last week. And it only took 1 week. I didn't need 2 weeks off to feel that, just one. I did just very quickly, a little banter here. I guess you have to have two people to have a banter. Keith Alexander is out tonight. He too, we're family men above all else. One of his children have a special occasion tonight, and so Keith is out for that. He'll be back with us next week, and then we'll be truly back at full strength. But it was nice to have last week off with my wife. Let's do a little bit of a timeline here on my wife. So, you know, I met my wife in 2001, and I started the show in 2004. and we got married in 2006. So my wife has truly been a part of my life before the show even started. So she's been with me through all of this. She was with me during my campaign for state representative in 2002, through that into the beginning of the show, and then for all of these years after. So truly a life partner. And I put a picture of us up, by the way, on the website on Monday, the day after our anniversary. Our anniversary was May 6th. A picture of us on our wedding day, and then another picture of us 13 years after exchanging our vows. And that would have been last Sunday. And it's just a great story. We talk about it, having met at church. And my pastor, who was on with us, of course, on the show the night before Easter last month, he was the one who introduced us for the first time. And we got engaged in 2005 at Cinderella's Castle in Walt Disney World, of all places. And then we were married a year later, May 5th, on my grandmother's birthday, which is why we selected that date. And I've just been blessed with two amazing and wonderful children, Isabel and Henry. She has stood by, my wife has, and supported my efforts while we have toiled in the vineyard of political activism. She's never wavered, even though the spotlight is always on our work here. But at the end of the day, folks, marriage and families are the building blocks of civilization. That is what it's all about. And she, like yours truly, listened to last week's show as we were driving back to Memphis a few days ago. And she enjoyed listening to the ladies in last week's second hour. I just want to thank one more time Sam and Winston and the guests for what they put together in my absence. Winston, of course, with his loss of hearing, isn't on the show as much as he was before he lost his hearing some years ago. But he's on, I probably miss, what, 2 or 3 weeks a year, you know, at most. And Winston is my go-to guy to guest host the show if I'm ever going to be out for a full 3 hours. And he really takes seriously that opportunity. And so he started preparing for last week's show 2 weeks in advance. And I just want to also thank Winston for the kind words he said. You know, we always talk about family. You're part of our family. We are each other's family. The crew here is a family. You know, he talked about actually being at my wedding. And he, of course, he was there. And the kind words. The reflections and the reminiscing that we do, it just goes to show how true and pure and organic our tight-knit community here at TPC is. And, of course, you are, ladies and gentlemen, a big, big part of that. There would be no TPC, of course, without the audience. So, anyway, it's great to be back. And, I mentioned Ted Pike's going to be on to talk about – well, I don't think that's – going over the top in assessing this as legislation that could once and for all criminalize free speech here in America. And then in the third hour, we're going to have Rick Tyler. Now, he sent me his bio before the show. Rick's been on the show a couple of times before, but I don't remember this. He's the father of 19 children. I mean, that's got to be a typo, right? We're going to find out, but he's the father of 19 children. He's also the newly minted presidential candidate for the American Freedom Party in 2020. He has a speech coming up at a major university this weekend. He's going to tell us all about that, as well as some other exciting forthcoming engagements that he has on his calendar. And let me tell you something, folks. You're going to want to hear where he's going and what he's going to be doing. That's all coming up. But first, in the first hour, I've got so many current events I want to talk to you about, things I've been bookmarking during my one-week hiatus. We're going to get to them when we come back. And we'll be right back.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, let's get down to work, everybody. Like I said, while I was out of town, I would bookmark a couple of stories that I saw that I thought would be interesting. Saw a couple on the total impotence of conservatism. And before I share with you what those stories are, let's first go back to Robert Louis Dabney's words of warning about conservatism. So, of course, R.L. Dabney was a Southern Presbyterian theologian who served as a chaplain in the War Between the States and as chief of staff to Stonewall Jackson. This is what he said about conservatism. It may be inferred again that the present movement for women's rights, now this is him writing in the 1800s, keep in mind, the present movement for women's rights will certainly prevail from the history of its only opponent, Northern conservatism. This is a party which never conserves anything. Now, apply this to what is now known as the conservative movement. Its history has been that it demurs to each aggression of the progressive party and aims to save its credit by a respectable amount of growling, but always acquiesces at last in the innovation. What was the resisted novelty of yesterday is today one of the accepted principles of conservatism. It is now conservative only in affecting to resist the next innovation, which will tomorrow be forced upon its timidity and will be succeeded by some third revolution to be denounced and then adopted in its turn. American conservatism is merely the shadow that followed radicalism as it moves forward towards perdition. It remains behind it, but never retards it, and always advances near its leader. So there you go. I mean, basically, he's talking about its impotency, and he, in fact, continues by writing, its impotency is not hard to explain. It is worthless because it is the conservatism of expediency only and not of sturdy principle. It intends to risk nothing serious for the sake of truth and has no idea of being guilty of the folly of martyrdom. It always, when about to enter a protest, very blandly informs the wild beast whose path it essays to stop that its bark is worse than its bite. What a prophet Dabney was. And that it only means to save its manners by enacting its decent role of resistance. The only practical purpose which it now serves in American politics is to give enough exercise to radicalism to keep it in wind and to prevent it from becoming lazy, from having nothing to whip. No doubt, after a few years, when women's suffrage shall have been an accomplished fact, conservatism will tacitly admit into its creed. And thenceforth plume itself upon its wise firmness in opposing with similar weapons the extreme of baby suffrage. And when that shall too have been won, it will be heard declaring that the integrity of the American Constitution requires at least the refusal of suffrage to asses. There it will assume with great dignity its final position. He's talking about how conservatism never conserves anything. It was true in his day, in the post-war years, when I believe he wrote that. And it's certainly even more true today. The conservative movement is a farce. It is impotent. And I've got two examples for you that will prove that. Two of the latest examples. A couple of mascots are under fire this week. California State University Long Beach, which is the university, of course, which Kevin McDonald used to profess. California State University, Long Beach. Now, this is coming from a so-called conservative writer for a so-called conservative student newspaper. Okay, so this is a conservative publication and a conservative writer. Listen to how he defends Prospector Pete. Now, Prospector Pete was the mascot for Cal State University, Long Beach. He was put to death this week. Because they say that, he's a racist, you know. He's a caricature of what they think a prospector may have looked like in the 1800s. He's been the school's mascot since it opened in 1949. Prospector Pete, listen to the article. Prospector Pete, symbol of the California gold rush, last year had his statue removed from prominent view and has now been entirely disappeared as the gold rush, according to the school, was a time in history when the indigenous people of California endured subjugation, violence, and threats of genocide. One wonders, the author continues, how many indigenous people were displaced to build California's 23 state colleges, the first of which was in San Jose in 1857, and to whom California should be returned if they'll take it. So far, so good, right? So far, so good. I find nothing here with which I disagree. Theater of the absurd, and it is absurd. He's right. If only it were theater. Fascinating how those who demand unconditional tolerance are among the most selectively and stridently intolerant. He's right about all of this. So far, so good. And he continues. There's much work to do to rid California of this scourge, he says in a very tongue-in-cheek manner. In San Diego, the Padres are named for those who proselytized the indigenous to their religious convictions. California has two kings, talking about the Los Angeles Kings and the Sacramento Kings, the sports franchises, one in L.A., the other in Sacramento. What's more repugnant to democracy than a monarchy? And while we're at it, it's time that New York drop Queens for something more gender inclusive, say the Borough of Empowered Women. Raiders gotta go. With the Warriors, you can't spell that without war. And if Prospector Pete is kaput, how can California abide by a team named for the Gold Rush miners themselves, the San Francisco 49ers? Everything he said so far is a stout defense of the absurdity of removing Prospector Pete for being a racist. Okay, this caricature. But listen to how he finished it. This goes back to reinforce Stonewall Jackson's point of contention. Now listen to what this conservative writer writes. But I'm not resistant to all nickname changes. The Indians and the Redskins I'd have dropped long ago. Why perpetuate names predicated on race and skin color? So there you have it. All right, so right now he is pushing back ever so mildly against the absurdity of renaming Prospector Pete or dropping the Prospector Pete mascot. But then he acquiesces, just as R.L. Dabney said. As R.L. Dabney said, he is accepting yesterday's leftist advancement and resisting only timidly today's. Yeah, the Redskins and the Indians are bad, he says. Oh, I'm all for that. No, how awful, how racist those names are. But no, why drop the Prospector? What a joke. This is why conservatism never wins. You know, I would have said something along the lines of, well, why not name them the Savages? Because that's what they were, you know, if you want to get down to it. But, you know, what it really is that the you know, Americans, white Americans, respected their conquered foes. How many bridges, how many cities, how many rivers, how many states do we have named after Indians? We understood what they were, and we understood what had to happen. But there was still a level of respect. That's why we named these things. That's why we named teams after them. But this goes to show a classic example of why conservatism never wins. He's accepting yesterday's grievance and pushing back softly against today's. And in a few years, he will accept today's grievance and oppose timidly tomorrow's grievance. What I would have said is this, and what I did say on Twitter was this. They pretend to be offended by Confederate heroes. They pretend to be offended by a cartoonish mascot resembling a prospector. In truth, they're not really offended by either. They simply hate white people. Now, if this guy had any guts, that's what he would have written in his column. Not saying, yes, I agree with what they're complaining about yesterday, these chronic malcontents, what they were complaining about yesterday. But today, Prospector Pete, that's a guy worthy of fighting for. Forget our Confederate ancestors. Forget the things worthy. This cartoonish mascot, this caricature, that's where I'm going to draw my line in the sand. And this is your conservative columnist for a conservative publication, and that's where we're at. But that's not the only one. So there's another one that I'm going to tell you about when we come back right after this.
Listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
With the news of President Trump increasing tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods after trade talks between Washington and Beijing failed to come to an agreement, former Walmart CEO Bill Simon says you have to remember.
The large retailers in general are in a position to absorb some of it, but not all of it. They'll end up having to pass some of it through. I think the next 3 to 4 weeks are very, very critical. There's still time to negotiate, and the pipeline of products that are on the way over here won't see those increases just yet.
Houston is bracing for more rain on Saturday after heavy rain on Friday stranded drivers and caused highways to be shut down. Thousands also were left without power. Flash flood warnings and watches are in effect in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. And at a graduation ceremony at Liberty University, Vice President Mike Pence says freedom of religion is under assault. This is USA Radio News.
Do you wish you could get better sleep and maybe lose a few pounds? Maybe more than a few pounds? Well, there's this product called Calitrin that helps with both sleep and weight loss. Just listen to what people are saying about it.
I've been taking Calitrim for right about 3 months, and I've lost 24 pounds and 19 overall inches. But my sleep has improved, I have so much more energy, and I have the desire to succeed more than ever. Anyone who needs weight loss, more energy, and better sleep, this product really does deliver.
Hi, I'm Roger. Over the 3 months that I took the product, my sleeping habits are increasingly much better. I got a better night's sleep, and I just can't say enough about the product and how it makes you feel. Also, additionally lost a little bit of weight on the program as well.
Hi, this is Erickson. I take Calitrin for weight loss, and I've lost about 20 pounds, and I feel great.
Calitrin is scientifically proven to help with sleep and weight loss safely and effectively. Check it out at toploss.com. That's toploss.com.
Switching to the campaign trail, New York Democratic Senator and 2020 hopeful Kirsten Gillibrand is campaigning in New Hampshire. She says global warming and climate change will be the first thing that she tackles as president.
And the reason why I know I can pass a Green New Deal is because all of the elements of it are already bipartisan and ones I've been working on for a decade.
The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has issued a recall notice for a brand of marine coolers due to concerns of suffocation. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has the details.
The coolers are made by Igloo and feature a stainless steel latch that can automatically lock when the lid is closed that could allow a small child to become trapped, posing a hazard that could lead to suffocation. An estimated 60,000 of these coolers were manufactured by Igloo Products of Katy, Texas for boats and marine environments and were sold from 2015 through March of this year. Consumers should put these coolers out of the reach of children and contact the manufacturer.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, so we talked a little bit in the last segment, well, the entire last segment, about really how conservatism is dead. I mean, this is what you're getting out of your conservative mouthpieces. You're getting the acceptance of yesterday's grievances of the left, a modicum of pushback against today's grievances, which will be by tomorrow accepted, and really entrenched into the conservative ethos as we see. I mean, they pretend that Martin Luther King was a conservative, and they basically, this is their version of winning. They accept the tenets of the left and pretend that they were the right's tenets all along, which is, of course, laughable. But here's another one. So we talked about Prospector Pete getting the boot from being the mascot at Cal State University. At George Washington University, they're trying to get the team's name changed from the George Washington Colonials, that's their nickname, to the George Washington, so help me God, the George Washington Hippos. That's what they're trying to do. Change the name from the George Washington Colonials to the George Washington University Hippos, all right? And what they're saying is the use of colonials, no matter how innocent the intention, is received as extremely offensive by not only the affiliates of the university, but the nation and the world at large. The historically negatively charged figure of a colonial has too deep a connection to colonialization and glorifies the act of systemic oppression. So that's what they're saying. But don't worry, everybody. There's a conservative columnist named Daniel Payne who writes for the College Fix, and he's gonna lead us to victory on this one, because listen to what he writes. He talks about how it's this is what he says. Let's just get this out of the way. No, a colonial mascot is not received as extremely offensive by very many people at all. And, of course, he's right about that. And he goes on and he offers a little bit of reasoning as to why they should keep the name colonial. But just as in the last article I shared with you, at the very end of it, here's this little nugget to let you know that he is an acceptable conservative. He is a respectable conservative. He writes, "It is true, though, George Washington, lest we forget, was a willing and perpetual owner of slaves and a profiteer of slave labor, and could only bring himself to totally free his slaves posthumously. George Washington, of course, was more than his admittedly catastrophic moral failings." Let me tell you something. George Washington was a better man than you or anyone who thinks like you will ever be. That's what he was. And he was that at once, and he also owned slaves. And let me tell you something. What was true yesterday is true today, and it will be true until the end of time. Homosexual marriage, I don't care if it's the accepted law of the land, it is wrong, it is evil, it is degenerate, and it should have no place in a healthy society. Same for forced integration, same for everything that was ever true, but we're supposed to pretend is true no longer because a corrupt society in a controlled government tells us that that's not what we're supposed to think. That's not the way we do business here at TPC. And shame on the conservatives for being so weak. They are truly the Washington Generals. And it is because of the impotence that R.L. Dabney told us about, that he saw back in the 1800s, that we have, listen to this. This is what the left is always advancing. They're always advancing their position. They never stop. Listen to what's passing now for racism. You know, I wrote a book, Racism, Schmacism, back in 2010, if you can believe it's been that long ago, where I compiled what was at the time the most egregious examples, the most laughable examples of what so-called what passes for so-called racism. But never did I even then foresee something like this. Are you a second story racist? Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you, are you a second story racist? The New York Times, the world's newspaper of record, wants to know that there is a problem with second story racism. So this is another example of the tactics that they want us to believe that whites use to intimidate and harass black people. White people, they say, build two-story houses, willfully ignoring how that makes black people feel. Because as we all know, blacks are psychologically devastated when they see a white family living in a two-story house. Because that causes them to remember how back in the slave days, the white overseer would be watching from the second story, sitting there with his whip to make sure that those blacks were picking masses cotton. And remember, all you white racists, before you deny that all of you who live in two-story houses are not guilty, guilty, guilty. You are reading this in the New York Times, America's greatest newspaper. This is what the New York Times says, so it must be true. And so there's this story that appeared in the New York Times a few days ago, and they're profiling this neighborhood in Raleigh, North Carolina, okay? And what's going on there is that it's a traditionally black neighborhood, but, you know, whites are all, you know, I write about this in the book. Whites are always racist no matter what they do. If they leave a neighborhood that is transitioning into becoming a majority black neighborhood, well, they're racist, of course, because they're engaging in white flight to get away from blacks, and that's very racist. If they move into a neighborhood that is majority black, well, they're guilty of being racist there, too, because they're gentrifying the neighborhood, you see. And so, really, whatever a white person does, it's always racist. There's no way around it. And this is what the New York Times is writing about here. A few new homes, I'm reading now from the story, a few new homes rise high above the modest single-story properties around them. Those houses, some longtime residents lament, feel so large that they evoke plantation homes, complete with second-story porches that an overseer might have used to keep an eye on black residents nearby. Folks, that's in the New York Times just a few days ago. This is what passes for racism now. White people moving in and building a two-story house. And now a two-story house is supposed to conjure up memories that no black living ever had, of course, about a supposed plantation owner. But truly, what's wrong with white people and why they're so callously indifferent and cruel towards blacks who are emotionally raped by the sight of second story houses? Now, that's what they want you to believe. And that's what conservatives will believe tomorrow because they don't have the guts to stand and tell the truth. But we do. And we always have here on TPC, and we always will. For 15 years now, we have been telling the truth thanks to your gracious support, thanks to God's good graces. We've been here, and we will continue. But I tell you, that just about beats all that I've ever seen with regards of what is supposed to be racist behavior. Now, you can't even be a white person who lives in a two-story house without being guilty of the offense. It's amazing. Yeah, all white homes are racist now. It's amazing to think that people can pretend to take such an assertion seriously. I mean, again, Dabney's assessment of conservatism in the 1800s was spot on. And it's because of that impotency that the conservative movement has always had that the horde becomes increasingly bizarre with regard to what offends them. The absurdity is now increasing at such an astonishing rate that we can actually see the needle moving in real time. And that's in the New York Times. I mean, that'd be one thing if it was in like the BET magazine or something like that, but in the New York Times. I do have a little bit of good news coming for you, if you can believe it. I mean, from time to time, we do get that here at TPC. And when it is, we're always quick to share it with you. But before I share that with you in the next segment, let me remind you that the most recent edition of TOQ Live was broadcast last week. I was out of town, so I missed that as well. But of course, as you know, I signed on late last year to help Kevin McDonald host a monthly YouTube series called TOQ Live. and scheduling conflict kept me out this month, as it did last week's episode of TPC, in fact. But he had on as his guest last week Andrew Joyce, a scholar of 19th and 20th century history and literature. I think that the episode with Andrew Joyce on TOQ Live just might be the most profound and important of the series thus far. So I would encourage you to check it out. I posted it for you for your convenience at thepoliticalcesspool.org. There you can find it. The blog entry is appropriately enough entitled Kevin MacDonald and Andrew Joyce on TOQ Live. So you can't miss it, and embedded there in the post is the video itself. And I'll be back with Kevin for the June installment of TOQ Live, but I missed last week, so we only do it once a month, the first Sunday of every month or thereabouts. But anyway, it's worth taking a look at. Not right now. We want you to finish up listening to tonight's broadcast of TPC, but maybe sometime during the week you can go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and catch Kevin and Andrew on TOQ Live. Very good stuff. Very important conversation. The likes of which we're having right now, right, folks? We'll be back with a little bit of good news before we get to our guest for tonight, Reverend Ted Pike and Rick Tyler. Stay tuned.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. I teased you with some good news, and we are going to get to it, but first you got to suffer through one one more that was tailor-made for TPC. We'll get to it all before the end of this segment, though. So you know my trials and tribulations and lamentations with the Southern Baptist Convention and how they expelled my entire church. You know about all of that. But my goodness, boy, they're really going down. The Southern Baptist Convention has now at least one of its there are six seminaries that make up the breeding ground of the next generation of Southern Baptists, six seminaries. And one of those seminaries has implemented a no whites allowed policy. Well, I guess we saw that coming, didn't we? The Southern Baptist Seminary School to hold minorities only job fair. Now, that's, of course, interesting because, as we know, in the 1840s, the Southern Baptist Convention was founded by future Confederates, people who disagreed with Baptists at large that you couldn't be a missionary while being a slave owner. So we've gone from that to this. That's progress, as they put it. The story reads, a Southern Baptist Seminary School plans to hold a minorities-only job fair that will exclude white candidates. And this is the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, one of the Southern Baptist Convention's six seminaries. It's hosting a job fair and hiring event for minorities only. When reached by the phone, Jennifer, at the Dean of Students' office at the seminary, confirmed that the event was only for non-whites. She reiterated that it was not an outside job fair, but was only for staffing positions within the seminary and was there for an inside job fair. So I guess that's okay. If you exclude whites, if it's an inside thing. Wasn't that what the whole swindle whites movement in the 60s was all about? I mean, wasn't there like owners of private diners that wanted to keep it whites only? They couldn't do that. They sent in the National Guard. They need to send the National Guard here to this seminary. Please, when you do, let me lead that brigade. I'll give them the bayonet, as Stonewall Jackson would have encouraged us to do. But no, seriously, folks, the Southern Baptist Convention and other evangelical churches are dying, and we've shared this with you before, but they're dying because they alienate men who are the natural spiritual leaders of families. The church today, with its cucking on race and feminism and immigration, demands that the saving grace of Christ comes attached at the hip with a sick suicide cult of namby-pamby feminized leaders like Russell Moore and Steve Gaines and J.D. Greer. It does it even qualify as gospel when any sane person must reject the suicidal package offered by the modern church? Dabney, again, said as much when examining the sick displays of apostasy in his day, his point being that any reasonable person would reject such a ridiculous practice of religion out of hand. And the problem is that causes the very best of our men to be alienated from Christianity. So those of us who are manly and are Christians can only hope that there is some extraordinary measure of grace at work today because the reasonable unbeliever, the disproportionately non-religious conservative white, cannot but look at the church and gag. And I've come to the conclusion that we must await the charismatic and forceful advocate of traditional Christianity who's going to drive these cucks from the pulpit. I know probably better than anyone who is a detractor of Christianity in our ranks the problems with the church. But I must say that I do believe that no nationalist movement that is not Christ-centered, or at the very least Christ-friendly, will be successful. Brett McAtee talked about this last week. I think it was the greatest presentation. I said it already once tonight. I think it was the greatest presentation, the greatest hour we've ever had on faith and politics. And I tell you this because I believe it. I'm certainly not saying it for the money. You know, there was two times in my life, quite interestingly and quite ironically, that I turned down opportunities for real advancement. Now, we have built something very organically here at TPC. We've made so much news. We've been very successful. You know, we did it the hard way. That's for sure. And I turned down opportunities for a quick advancement twice. The first time, and I've shared these stories with you, of course, but in the past. But the first time we were on the air, maybe less than a year before I got the reputation that I am now so proud of. We had the opportunity to join a Christian broadcasting network, and they said, you know, we love, we think you've got talent. And I met with this guy at a gun range. because I think you've got talent, and we appreciate what you're doing. And if you just drop any talk about, you know, the racial issues that you talk about, you know, we'd like to have you on this network. And it would be it would have been a paid position. I said, I'm sorry, I just can't do that. A few years later, another gentleman who was a good guy, and he was a generous financial supporter of the show. And he had left me in his will some $75,000 in cash and then some stock options. And but he always said, you know, I love what you say about race. This was the exact opposite of the first, you know, encounter. I love what you talk about, you know, your positions on the racial issues. But, you know, you talk about Christianity too much. You know, I wish you'd kind of not talk about that so much. And I said, well, you know, I appreciate that, but I just can't do that. And he ended up rescinding, you know, his bequest, and he ended up giving it all to Derek Black. And he passed away, and Derek Black got all that, you know, money, and we know what happened with Derek. But anyway, the point is, I'll never betray a friend, and I'll never betray my beliefs. You know, without that, it just doesn't stand up. You could not do a show like this where you're under constant attack unless you truly believe in what you're doing. Unless you're truly passionate about those beliefs. Now, you might not always agree with everything that we say on the show, but you know you can always trust us. TPC is sincere, committed, and battle-tested, and those are the people that are going to lead us to victory in the future. Now, I did say there was some good news, and there was a small victory in Charlottesville, no less. I read now from our good friend Brad Griffin over at Occidental Dissent. A Virginia judge in Charlottesville has ruled that the Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson statues in the city are war memorials and therefore protected by law. It's not often that we see good news, especially good news or anything positive coming out of Charlottesville, but a Charlottesville judge ruled that the two downtown statues, those that the right, Unite the Right rally was intending to advocate in favor of maintaining before all of that happened, and we know what happened there with the government and the governor and the law enforcement basically ensuring that Charlottesville became a kill box rather than a city that enforced the rule of laws. But so good news out of Charlottesville is good news indeed. And he ruled that the two downtown statues depicting Confederate generals are war memorials and therefore protected by state code. Circuit Judge Richard Moore stated in a letter dated April 25th that the city's statues of Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson are war memorials. And listen, he didn't only write that, he wrote it quite forcefully. Listen to what he actually said. I find this conclusion inescapable. It is the very reason the statues have been complained about from the beginning. It does no good pretending that they are something other than what they actually are. The matter is so clear, he continued, that he also wrote that if a jury were to find that the statues were not monuments or memorials to Civil War veterans, that he would find the verdict unreasonable and contrary to the law. So, I propose a toast to Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee for their latest victory. And the SPLC was lamenting. The SPLC has been lamenting a lot lately, as you know. But they finally had the chance to update their blog for the first time in quite a while. You know, all of their own officers are being accused of Me Too and sexual harassment and racist behavior, and so they've had their hands full. But they did find it within themselves to go in and lament this ruling. But a long-awaited victory in Charlottesville. You know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, certainly I'm sure there's a judge with a bigger gavel than this judge that'll contend with this, and it may go all the way to the Supreme Court. But nevertheless, a judge in Charlottesville itself rules in favor of the Lee and Jackson monument. So that's good. Now, we had last week's show, which was the 1st of May. This is my first show back since Confederate History Month. And I want to remind you that you can celebrate Confederate history all year long, and you should, by going to DixieRepublic.com. All of those T-shirts, if you donated to our special Confederate History Month supplemental fundraising drive a few weeks ago, all of those T-shirts have been ordered. There's those special made T-shirts, the Confederate gray TPC T-shirts. I talked to Scott Goldsmith at Dixie Republic, DixieRepublic.com. They have been sent to the printer, and he is going to be fulfilling those orders. All of the information has been sent to Scott. and he's going to be fulfilling those orders. So if you did donate $100 or more last month, or was it, it was $100 or more, you're going to be getting those T-shirts within the next week or two. So stay tuned. They are in. Stay tuned to your mailbox. They are en route, or will be shortly, and we hope you enjoy them, and we thank you for your help. But they, those orders have been submitted, and they are in the process of being fulfilled right now. So we just wanted to give you a quick update on that. So that's exciting. Wow. Great to be back. Well, I feel like I've got a stretch of my long legs here. You know, I'm 6'2". So I've got a little stretch. I feel like I've been out for a nice jog, and I'm going to, you know, just continue to ramp up the pace back in action after a week off. It seemed like a year off, I tell you. But really excited about the next 2 hours as well. I hope you enjoyed that first hour. It's a clergy coincidence. We're not turning the entire show over to Men of the Cloth, but I guess it seems that way. With my pastor on the week before Easter, and then last week with Reverend Brett McAtee. We got Reverend Ted Pike coming up next, but for good reason. He published for the first time in a few years an article about this Equality Act, and he's making a very rare radio appearance tonight to share with us the cause for alarm. Stay tuned. We're going to get to Ted next.
Political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.